Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download Bashani Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download Bashani Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.
You're listening to The Spectrum. Bob Henry. The Ivory Coast Media Production.
Thank you for tuning in once again to The Spectrum with Bob Ivory for the final week of July 2021. Wow, it seems like this year is set on fast forward. Can you believe we're about to enter the eighth month of the year already? Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you are meeting all of the objectives you set for yourselves for this year and that you are doing all to safeguard your health. Are you skeptical about the vaccines? Does it make you a little paranoid that if you're from the African American community, that there seems to be an extra urgency to hurry up and get the vaccine? And what about the Delta variant? It seems that they invent disaster just in case you have a glimmer of hope left in your heart, or when it's about to grow there. And they come very quickly with a very new and seemingly deadlier strain to cause you to lose your confidence. What's my advice to you as all this distressing news hits the airwaves? Get as many facts as you can. Do what you can to give yourself the best chance of survival. Take all the information you learn and you make up your own mind, and above all, you go ahead and live your life. Whatever you do, never ever allow your life to be governed by fear. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the beautiful thing about being human is that you can choose your attitude and be empowered by positive feelings and emotions that can give you wings to lift you above all the negativity that is in the world and bring you to a new horizon of hopeful opportunities and experiences. Remember, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Ladies and gentlemen, I am excited to announce a new segment to our show that we are calling In Focus, Black News and Commentary with author, activist, and lawyer Nkechi Taifa. But before we hear from Nkechi, I want you to hear a special message from today's show sponsor, author, poet, and playwright Rosalind Chenault. It's time to let love back in. When many of us began distancing ourselves because of COVID, we inadvertently cut off the pathway of the virtues of love and true intimacy in exchange for a lifestyle of fear and uncertainty. Now, many of us ache for love and affection as never before as a result of being quarantined and denied human contact. Here's one safe way to crack the door and give love a try again in the passionate and provocative book of poetry by Rosalind Chenault entitled Poetry for Lovers Only. Don't let the title fool you, because quite frankly, I think there's a lover inside of every one of us. Read this book and you'll find out for yourself. Couples are encouraged to get a copy each and read to each other. Sounds like a fantastically sensual experience to me. Poetry for Lovers Only, an artful compilation of poetry that passionately expresses love, emotional intimacy, and the everyday challenges of the heart. Go to rozhearttoheart.com to order your copies right now. Go to rozhearttoheart.com. That's R-O-Z-Z-H-E-A-R-T, the number 2, heart, H-E-A-R-T.com, to order your copies right now. You'll be glad you did. And now, In Focus, Black News and Commentary with Nkechi Taifa.
So I will introduce our final speaker before the lunch break. Last year, the Color Surveillance Conference focused on surveillance of the African American community. And the image we designed for the conference featured leaders of the African American civil rights movement throughout the 20th century who'd been subject to legal or extra-legal surveillance. And included in that list from right to left were Martin Luther King, Whitney Young, Fannie Lou Hamer, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Marcus Garvey, the leader of the Pan-Africanist movement and himself a Jamaican immigrant. And his persecution, Marcus Garvey's persecution, surveillance, and deportation are a testament to the fact that racial justice and immigrant rights are intertwined deeply. We are lucky to have with us today Nkechi Taifa from the Open Society's Foundations to speak about the deportation of Marcus Garvey. If you'll join me in welcoming Nkechi Taifa.
So the esteemed professor, Justin Hansford, is one of the foremost scholars on Marcus Garvey, his movement, surveillance, deportation, and efforts at pardon. So I'm humbled to have been asked to sit in for him on this topic during his emergency away. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about Marcus Garvey. An individual, I dare say, many in this room have never heard about. Talk about why he was targeted, surveilled, imprisoned, and subsequently deported by the United States government and measures today to clear his name. So of all of the movements that began in the early part of the 20th century, it was the Garvey movement that was the most personal to me. Was it because it was the most successful mass organization during its time and probably afterwards for the pride and confidence and hope of the black community? Nope. Was it because the movement uplifted the critical importance of economic independence and the patronization of black businesses? Nope. Was it because the movement laid the seeds and served as the foundation for just about every black movement to come? No. The Garvey movement was most personal to me because it was in some way, shape, form, or fashion the movement that touched my grandfather, James Albert McIntosh, who was an immigrant from the islands, like Garvey, and he taught his son, my Uncle Ambrose, who was born in 1910, just to put it in a chronological context, that was the same year that Harriet Tubman passed. He taught him about this man and his movement. Now, I never knew my grandfather because he passed when I was a baby, but I did know my Uncle Ambrose, who was a youth during the height of the Garvey movement during the early part of the 20th century. My uncle was not a militant, wasn't a race man, but like thousands of his contemporaries growing up in Harlem, New York, the Garvey movement was part of the ordinary course of affairs. You see, it was commonplace to see politicians and preachers and others honing their oratorical skills, propped up on street corner soapboxes, and this is exactly what Marcus Garvey did. And my Uncle Ambrose, as a youth, growing up amidst it all, being guided by his Caribbean-born father, he drank it all in. Marcus Garvey lives in history as one of the first leaders of the civil and human rights movement in the United States. He was born in Jamaica in 1887, witnessed firsthand the degradation of black people worldwide. He traveled to the United States after being profoundly influenced by Booker T. Washington's autobiography, and Garvey later announced, and I'm quoting, he said, "I read Up From Slavery by Booker T. Washington, and then my doom, if I so may call it, of being a race leader dawned upon me. I asked, where is the black man's government? Where is his king and his kingdom? Where is his president, his country, his ambassador, his army, his navy, his men of big affairs?" And he said he looked around and he could not find them. And then he declared, "I will help to make them." That was profound. And he was ultimately punished quite severely for it. In the early 20th century, Marcus Garvey was an advocate for the social, political, and economic independence for people of African descent around the world. And to unite his followers, he founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League, also known as the UNIA, which at its height boasted nearly 6 million members spanning over 40 countries. In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, who laid a wreath at the Garvey Shrine in Jamaica, he stated, quote, "Marcus Garvey was the first man on a mass scale and level to give millions of Negroes a sense of dignity and destiny and to make the Negro feel that he was somebody." And Malcolm X said that it was Marcus Garvey's philosophy of Pan-Africanism that initiated the entire freedom movement, which brought about the independence of African and Caribbean nations. Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of an independent Ghana, stated, "I think of all the literature I studied, the book that did more than any other to fire my enthusiasm was the philosophy and the opinions of Marcus Garvey." Marcus Garvey's vision was not confined domestically. In 1920, he called for the first international convention of the UNIA with delegates representing all parts of the world. Several thousand black delegates came from the then all 48 states and from more than a score of countries spanning three continents. Among those in attendance were Ho Chi Minh, Kwame Nkrumah, Mahatma Gandhi, the Reverend Earl Little, Elijah Muhammad, all of whom would draw upon the teachings of Garvey at this convention in later years, fashioning struggles for victory around the world. Among those in the huge parades of Garvey during the early 20s were units of African Legionnaires, the military arm of Garvey's organization. And although unarmed, many of them had World War I experience, and their presence made it plain that they believed in self-defense. Another uniformed part of the UNIA at the Harlem parades were the Black Cross nurses, and the existence of the Black Cross nurses indicated the readiness of the UNIA to come to the aid of stricken people all around the world. And although outsiders may have ridiculed the elaborate procedures of the Garvey organization, none overlooked its importance in restoring the all but shattered black self-confidence. During 1919 and 1920, the UNIA grew spectacularly, and black masses responded by the thousands. Early in 1919, Garvey began to speak of a fleet of black-owned and operated steamships, which would link all African people and unite the black diaspora. This fleet of ships was called the Black Star Line, whose purpose, he declared, was to serve as a commercial and spiritual tie among blacks wherever ships travel. So, what happened? Where are the Black Cross nurses today? Where are the original Black Legionnaires? Where is the Black Star Steamship Line? And just what happened to the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey? Despite its success as a symbol of black economic independence and a recruiting tool for the UNIA, the Black Star Line encountered significant obstacles due to racial issues. And moreover, although bustling at the end of World War I, the entire shipping industry faced a downturn in 1919. Shipping companies, including the Black Star Line, failed. During that time, the Black Star Line and its competitors continued to advertise shipping voyages until the day the company ceased to do business. However, it was only Marcus Garvey who was the one charged with engaging in misrepresentation and trying to keep his operation afloat during the industry's depression. There was also opposition from Garvey's rivals in the black community. Garvey had an extensive grassroots network and was raking in loads of money and essentially cornered the personal contribution market. His rivals engaged in a vicious campaign to manipulate the public narrative about Garvey, and this smear campaign was coordinated in concert with the United States government. Permit me to share with you an example of one of the many reports received by the Military Intelligence Division of the United States Army. Quote, there is a man by the name of Garvey, in parentheses, colored, who preaches every night against the white people, generally from 134th to 137th Street and Lenox Avenue. Another example. On September 18, 1918, the Bureau of Investigation reported that, quote, a confidential employee, end of quote, had been inserted in Garvey's meetings who submitted reports and copies of the Negro World, that was the publication that Garvey started, with a warning that Garvey's activities must be closely watched. In 1919, J. Edgar Hoover was placed as head of the General Intelligence Division of the DOJ's Bureau of Investigation, the predecessor to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, responsible for gathering evidence against radicals and immigrants the government feared were promoting communism. And in 1919, J. Edgar Hoover wrote a memo that Garvey, quote, was particularly active among the radical elements in New York City in agitating the Negro movement. Unfortunately, however, Hoover continued, quote, he has not violated any federal law whereby he could be proceeded against on the grounds of being an undesirable alien from the point of view of deportation. It occurs to me, however, Hoover continued, from the attached clippings that there might be some proceeding against him for fraud in connection with the Black Star Line propaganda. It is clear that for years before Garvey's eventual arrest for mail fraud in connection with the Black Star Line, Hoover pursued and targeted Garvey, and by early 1990, multiple federal agents had infiltrated his organization or befriended him. Sound familiar? Garvey was viewed as a threat. And decades before Dr. King would be targeted for his activism, J. Edgar Hoover led the Bureau of Investigation in its surveillance of Mr. Garvey and actively sought measures to disrupt and destroy the Garvey movement. Garvey became the first official target of what later became known as COINTELPRO, the FBI's once secret and quite illegal counterintelligence campaign to disrupt and destroy movements in general and the Black nationalist movement specifically. Never meant to be revealed to the world, these millions of pages of documents revealed what the Church Senate Select Committee, which later investigated the COINTELPRO, characterized as an orchestrated, coordinated war by the government against constitutionally protected activities. In 1923, based on intelligence gathered from undercover agents posing as Garvey supporters and aided by judicial proceedings that have largely been condemned as factually unsound and politically and racially motivated, Marcus Garvey was convicted of mail fraud and sentenced to the maximum 5 years in federal prison. As early as 1927, the U.S. Attorney General concluded that the case against him was unwarranted and untenable given the weak evidence against him. And in partial recognition of these facts, President Calvin Coolidge commuted his sentence in November of 1927, and he was promptly deported to Jamaica. A congressional inquiry and review of the historical record has led to agreement that Garvey was wrongfully convicted of using the mails to further a scheme to defraud. That conviction led to Garvey's deportation, effectively ended the movement which he spawned, precipitated his personal demise, and has harmed his family and community for over 90 years. So what caused the destabilization of Garvey's movement? The same thing that characterized movements before Garvey and after Garvey. The FBI memo stated that the goal of the COINTELPRO was to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and otherwise neutralize the activities of Black nationalist organizations and groupings and their leadership, their spokesmen, their membership, and their supporters. And in their own words, the FBI memo expanding the program described the long-range goals of the COINTELPRO as, number one, to prevent the coalition of Black nationalist militant groups. Number two, to prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant Black nationalist movement. To prevent Black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining respectability. And a final goal, of the FBI stated was to prevent the long-range growth of militant black organizations, especially among the youth. And it goes on and on. You've seen it. I'm coming to a close. The black community is still recovering from that unfortunate and highly successful enterprise. And there are still people languishing in prison who are victims of the COINTELPRO of the 60s and 70s. Although Garvey's sentence was commuted, his name is still tarnished by the stigma of his conviction. The Garvey family seeks to amend the historical record to reflect the esteemed nature of their ancestors' contributions to the global community. On June 27, 2016, an application for a posthumous pardon for Marcus Garvey was filed with the Office of the Pardon Attorney by his youngest son, Dr. Julius Garvey, on behalf of the Garvey descendants, Professor Charles Ogletree, Professor Justin Hansford, and Akin Gump Law Firm. And I was honored to serve as part of the legal advisory team. Presidential posthumous pardons have been granted to correct injustices and heal societal divisions by restoring the unjustifiably diminished reputations of historical figures admired by their communities. Marcus Garvey was targeted because of his race, because of his political beliefs. He received an unfair trial, and he was unceremoniously deported. And efforts to fully clear his name have been ongoing and concerted on the part of the U.S. Congress, civil society organizations, city, states, and international groups. The government of Jamaica declared Garvey its first national hero, bestowed the title of the Right Excellent to his name, and placed his image on Jamaican currency. The red, black, and green flag of the Garvey movement has become known as the flag of the Pan-African movement worldwide. So more than 90 years after the imposition of his unjust sentence, it is time to exonerate Marcus Garvey and let history reflect the true nature of his legacy. Thank you, Georgetown Center for Privacy and Technology, for including this important bit of history as part of this prestigious conference. Thank you.
In Focus, Black News and Commentary with Nkechi Taifa. If you're really serious about manifesting your dreams, you need a coach. Yes, you need a coach. A coach can save you years of fruitless effort and frustration. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. Someone has 20 years of experience. It's 20 years of ups and downs, 20 years of mistakes and triumphs, mountaintop experiences, valley experiences, the whole gamut. And you have the opportunity to be mentored, to be coached by such an individual. That will take years of mistakes off of your dream building process. Absolutely years of frustration that you can avoid by benefiting from someone else's knowledge, information, and wisdom. So if you're serious about manifesting your dreams, you need a coach that can guide you through the path. Imagine if you were going on a hike, you wouldn't go hiking through a land that you have never been to. At least I hope you wouldn't. Because the person that's been there, they know the terrain. They know where the holes are. They know where the places that exist, where the cliffs are, where you could fall over or fall off the cliff. A guide is going to save you a lot of misfortune. So, once again, if you are serious about manifesting your dreams, hire a coach. I know that personally for me, it has made a tremendous difference in my own life. So that's why I can recommend it to you, because I've experienced it myself. ready to take your dreams to the next dimension, DM me on Facebook or Instagram, and let's get you connected with the right people and resources to make your dreams manifest. You've been listening to The Spectrum with Bob Ivory. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Redesigned Bashani Radio app is hotter than ever. Now you can binge listen your favorite podcast show. And for those listeners that like to talk trash, excuse me, I mean give feedback. Just tap our new feedback button and run your mouth for 60 seconds. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store or listen online at BashaniRadio.com.